Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. We are on location at SEC Media Days here in Hoover outside of Birmingham. Logan, it might be on location somewhere else next year. They're talking about moving this around, maybe Nashville, Atlanta, maybe Dallas. I don't think they're going to go way over to Texas with this right away. What do you think?
I think it'd be neat. You know, they're going to move some things around. You know, they've talked about moving the SEC baseball tournament around. They've since made a commitment to be back here in Hoover, and I like that move. But, you know, for SEC Media Days, you know, it'd be nice because we do spend a lot of time in Birmingham. We kind of get to know the area, and I'm one of those people who like to travel and visit new places. So, you know, why not spread out? And, you know, SEC covers a wide area of the country, so spread it around and see how – you know, I guess other parts of the country kind of handle this event.
I could see that. I don't think they're fixing to go to Dallas with this event. It doesn't make really a lot of sense to me. I understand going into Texas, but Texas A&M is your school, and that's a lot closer to Houston. I would think they would go to Houston first with Media Days. Haven't heard that, though. A couple other cities being tossed about. Who knows? Could be right back here again. All right, we're kind of at the tail end of Media Days now. We'll be able to talk about what Dan Mullen, Mississippi State coach, said during his time. We're going to preview what we think will happen with Hugh Freeze, the Ole Miss coach. And that took a turn on Wednesday when Houston Nutt, the former coach, filed suit against the school. You know, just another day of drama on the Ole Miss beat. We'll talk about that. Hey, folks, I want to remind you before we get into Media Days, check out The Memo, our news podcast. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, all things Northeast Mississippi. Lots of good stuff there. Logan, let's start with Mississippi State. They've already come and gone here at Media Days. What did you learn?
Not much. You know, and we've talked about that this week between you and I. Just, you know, there's some years where there's more newsworthy things to talk about than others, and it's kind of just been a dull offseason for Mississippi State. There really just hasn't been a whole lot. Yeah, I mean, they're bringing in a new defensive coordinator and some new coaches on the staff, but if you follow Dan Mullen's tenure at Mississippi State, bringing in a new defensive coordinator is really not that it's pretty common. I mean, there's only been a few years where he's actually brought his defensive coordinator back. So, you know, there were some questions about Todd Grantham's defense a little bit, but probably not as much as I thought maybe be discussed this week. But, you know, really the only thing that I learned was about the center position. You know, Martinez Rankin was a 10-game starter for Mississippi State last year at left tackle. He spent all of spring taking snaps and trying to learn the center position. Mississippi State does not have a center coming back, and nobody on this roster has ever snapped a ball at the Division I level, so they're going to have to find somebody to fill that role for them this year. And Martinez Rankin took most of the reps during the spring at that spot, and you know, Mel Kiper from ESPN ranked Martinez Rankin as the number one center prospect for next year's draft, and yeah, that's high praise for a guy that's never snapped in a live ball game, but you know, that's kind of where he's at right now. But Dan Mullen announced on Tuesday when it was his turn to take the podium up there that Martinez Rankin's probably going to move back out to left tackle again, and Elkton Jenkins is going to be Mississippi State's center. And Elkton Jenkins has been a guy that played some tackle. He's played some guard for Mississippi State in the past. He didn't get a chance to work during the spring at that position. He was injured. So he's going to get a shot when they open up fall camp. You know, I talked to Martinez. He was one of the three players that came with Dan Mullen on Tuesday, and he said that he's still working at center, so there's a possibility that if something happens with Jenkins, you know, he could come back and fill that role. And he thinks that just having that versatility is really going to help him at the next level. You know, he's actually projected right now to be a first-round draft pick in next year's draft, and that's pretty high praise from a guy that you know, came in as the nation's number one junior college offensive lineman a couple of years ago and immediately redshirted. So, you know, people were kind of wondering, you know, is he a bust? Is something going wrong here? Because most of the time when you bring in a junior college player that highly recruited, they see the field immediately. I mean, they feel an immediate need. But Mississippi State was able to redshirt him, and then he came on last year. He didn't start off the first few games and kind of worked his way into that starting rotation, and ended up being a pretty solid lineman for Mississippi State last year, kind of, you know, a really good bookend to help protect Nick Fitzgerald down the stretch. And he's really their best offensive lineman, and they're going to, you know, roll with him this year. It looks like he's going to be that bookend again.
Why do you think he projects as a center in the NFL, and if that is how he projects, what does it mean that he's going to play, apparently, mostly tackle this year?
Well, he's not that, you know, a lot of times you see guys that are playing left tackle and right tackle in the NFL. They're 6'6", 6'7". You know, they got Martinez listed at 6'5", 305, which is a nice-sized lineman. But that's kind of more of a – he doesn't really have long arms or long legs. He's 6'5", but he's pretty solidly built together. You know, so he doesn't have that reach that you like from your offensive tackle. So if you can get him in the interior of the line, you know, he can kind of be that road grader for you. And I think that's kind of where he projects, you know, in the interior of the line, just because he doesn't have those long limbs to kind of get out there and try to, I guess, hem off some of those pass rushers coming off the edge.
I heard Dan Mullen talk about wanting his quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald, to be selective, be smart with the shots that he takes downfield. Wanted him to kind of accept the underneath route a little bit more and increase his completion percentage that way. What do you think is the comfort level, the confidence right now from Mullen to Fitzgerald and Fitzgerald's ability to consistently complete passes and move the chains?
And that's something he's got to do. I mean, his completion percentage was only about 54% last year, and he took a lot of shots downfield. You know, that's not a high completion percentage in those passes. You know, but you see that a lot. You know, he's a guy that came out of a wing tee offense in high school. He only played 1 year of high school football at the quarterback position, and that was in a wing tee offense. So he hadn't thrown the ball a whole lot in his career. So he's got a strong arm. He can make those throws, and he tries to make those throws. But he's trying to teach Nick Fitzgerald, and Coach Mullen is that, by the way, just trying to check the ball down, that it's okay to complete a 3-yard pass or a 5-yard pass or just something underneath to keep the chains moving instead of trying to hit that deep pass down the field to make a huge play. It's okay to settle for those underneath routes. And, you know, that's something he really needs to do this year, because the wide receiver position for Mississippi State is one of their weakest spots. So they don't have a whole lot of experience coming back at that spot. I mean, Donald Gray is coming back, but there's not a whole lot behind him, especially if Malik Deer is not able to play this year. He's still kind of up in the air with that torn ACL. So they're going to have to rely on their tight ends, their running backs, to do some different stuff underneath to keep, you know, that deep threat. I mean, they really just don't have that huge deep threat this year.
Defensively, what kind of questions did these players get today about Todd Grantham? And, you know, you say it's old hat with a new coordinator coming in. We've seen that several times, but, you know, there is some adjustment that takes place. There's always a little bit of change at least. What's that been like?
Well, Des Harris was the only defensive player that Mississippi State brought, and, you know, he's got a great story. He's torn his ACL three different times throughout his career, once as a senior in high school and twice since he's been at Mississippi State. So he's a fifth-year guy, and, you know, he's been through three different coordinators since he's been at State. You lose track of them. I think it's three or four. Anyway, but he's been through a bunch of them, so he's made that transition before. And, you know, that's one of the things he talked about. He said defense is defense. You know, it doesn't really matter who the, you know, coach is. He may have a little bit different terminology. But, you know, for the most part, they're doing the same things on that side of the ball. But they really need a drastic change on that side, because that was their weak spot last year. Peter Sermon came in as a first-time defensive coordinator and just didn't have Mississippi State in the right position a lot of the time. I mean, they had some talent on that side of the football last year, but you wouldn't have known it by looking at some of the yardage that they've given up, some of the points that they've given up. You know, looking back at even the Samford game last year, Samford's a good team at the level that they play at, but there's no way they should have went up and down the field offensively like they did on Mississippi State on their home field too. I mean, it became a shootout. Mississippi State won that game in a shootout. They just flat out had to outscore Samford because they couldn't stop them. And like I said, Mississippi State had a lot better athletes on the field that day than Samford did, but you wouldn't have known it because they were so out of position for a lot of the cases. And that was the case for most of the games last year. State was just simply out of position on a lot of the games that they played. So, you know, Todd Grantham, his pedigree has kind of been stop the run and rush the passer. That's kind of what he's been known for. He did that in the NFL. He's done that throughout college football. He's done that in the SEC before at Georgia. So, you know, they're banking on his experience to be a little bit more than, you know, Peter Sermon, who was a first-time defensive coordinator last year.
Where do you think this team finishes, Logan? I mean, every year here we hear Dan Mullen complain about being picked last and finishing higher. What are realistic expectations for this team?
I think they're going to be a little bit better than they were a year ago. Obviously, they backed into a bowl game with that APR score and, you know, was 5-7, ended up finishing 6-7 last season. So, yeah, I think they're going to be maybe a 7-5, possibly an 8-4 team if things go right. You know, they've got some stuff to build on. I mean, Nick Fitzgerald, they come into the season with an established quarterback. Aris Williams really came on down the stretch at running back. So they've got some weapons on that side of the ball. They brought in a great junior college class that have already got those guys on campus. So, you know, barring any, you know, significant injuries, State should be a little bit better than they were a year ago. But, you know, I don't see them win the West or anything like that.
We were talking about the completion percentage for Nick Fitzgerald. That's something that Hugh Freeze would like to see increase for his quarterback, Shea Patterson, as well. Patterson, a sophomore, will be the full-time starter for the first time in his career. You remember the story last year, the number one recruit in the 2016 signing class, the number one quarterback recruit, number four overall recruit, really a big-time guy. They tried to redshirt him, and then all of a sudden, Chad Kelly tears an ACL, and you wrestle with that decision. I don't think there was much wrestling. I think he knew that Shea Patterson was going to start those last three games. He did, and he played well. He had 6 touchdown passes, 3 interceptions. A couple of those interceptions I really did not think were his fault. I thought he did a good job of ball protection last year as a freshman. I think he comes in as a sophomore. He's settled and confident. I think he's got weapons at wide receiver. Can he increase his completion percentage this year? I think he will. I think part of what we saw last year, even though there was talent among those Ole Miss wide receivers, was chemistry. Those guys were not used to Patterson's ball. There's a different kind of catchability when you change quarterbacks. You know, you're dealing with the ball arriving in a different way. And you know, when they were making that change before the Texas A&M game last year, we talked about that. I really didn't think that was that big a deal. But then we saw those receivers, guys who had made big catches for Chad Kelly, we just saw them consistently drop passes the last three games. That's something I was really looking for in the spring, looking for the chemistry between Shea Patterson and these receivers. Some different guys right now after the departure of Demarie Stringfellow and Quincy Adebojo, Evan Ingram at tight end. So you've got some turnover there, still a lot of talent. I didn't see as many dropped passes. I think that chemistry is going to be there. I think it's going to increase this summer and in August camp. I think you're going to see Shea Patterson really take a step in that area in his first season as a starter. Those wide receivers, a lot of ability there, some four-star guys and sophomores. Well, let me say redshirt freshman DK Metcalf. He gets the year back last year after getting hurt early in the second game of the season. So he is a redshirt freshman. But you have DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown, big physical targets there at wide receiver, and Van Jefferson coming back, very steady guy in the slot, as well as Markell Pack, now a senior, very experienced. So lots of weapons there for Shea Patterson. The question is, how many questions will Hugh Freeze get for football on the field? He'll speak on Thursday. It's the last day of media days. He'll be the second of three coaches to go in the main ballroom there. We knew coming into this week that Freeze was going to get a lot of questions about the NCAA investigation, and we wonder how he would handle that. He didn't handle that well earlier this year here in Birmingham at a golf tournament when he was kind of met at the edge of the course by some media, and he just, when the question came around to the NCAA, and it did quickly, he just kind of looked into the cameras and shook his head and walked away. He's got to have a better plan today. And when we say plan, This is not just Hugh Freeze making comments here. This is a team effort. This is Freeze and Bjork together, and Freeze is kind of being guided a little bit on what to say and how to say and how to handle that question in public. It will be interesting to see what he does in the main ballroom. I would imagine that there will be some kind of statement made at the beginning, and he will refer to that statement, and if he does that with a few no comments, I think those questions will die down. But all of a sudden, he'll get questions now about the lawsuit, the Houston Nutt lawsuit. The former coach kind of let it be known at the end of May through his attorney, Thomas Mars of Little Rock, that he was not happy, that he feels like Ole Miss has kind of made him a scapegoat, that kind of the language and some public statements from Ross Bjork and Hugh Freeze has kind of implied that Houston Nutt was a bigger part of this NCAA investigation than has come out when Ole Miss has made these documents public. And there is some truth to that. I don't know that it rises to the level of a civil lawsuit, but obviously Houston Nutt does. In addition to that, Nutt is charging that Freeze and Bjork have kind of violated the severance agreement that he had with the school when he was fired as head coach after the 2011 season. So a lot of drama there. And within that lawsuit, he charges Bjork and Freeze with making false statements. And a lot of this goes to, a statement, the first statement Ross Bjork made back in 2016 in January when he was detailing the first notice of allegations. And he used the word many. He said many of the alleged violations go back to the previous staff. He didn't call Houston Nutt by name, but that's who he was talking about. Now, as it has come out and you look at the allegations, there really are just two out of 21 that go to Houston Nutt while he was the coach. Those deal with David Saunders, who was an administrative coach, administrative staff member, and with Chris Vaughn, who was an assistant coach, and both of those deal with an ACT scam and trying to get a couple of recruits to be eligible. So those are two violations there. And then two others deal with Saunders and Vaughn as they continue to go through the NCAA investigation. Vaughn is charged with talking to potential witnesses during the investigation, which is a violation. And Saunders is charged with making false and or misleading statements. But those second violations come after Nutt was already out of the picture. So anyway you slice it, there are four violations that deal with members of Houston Nutt's staff. And yes, that's a small number when you're talking about 21 violations total. But those are pretty big violations when you're talking about academic dishonesty and misconduct and grade fixing and, and that sort of thing. Those are pretty big violations. So anyway, no doubt that Hugh Freeze will get questions about the Nutt lawsuit tomorrow. It will be interesting to see how he handles that, what the strategy is there. Logan, one of the things that I look forward to at Media Days every year is about 10 to 12 minutes that Hugh Freeze has always provided for local media before his time in the main ballroom. We would go up to the third floor. There are some suites there. We would go back there and he would meet with the local guys, and that's great. That's a time where we could ask a lot of questions about the team. I'm not sure that that's going to be the case tomorrow. I'll be surprised if that's made available for us, and that's a shame because I just don't think this is the place to be for Ole Miss fans tomorrow if you're wanting to learn a lot about the team.
Right. And I think, we talked about earlier about not really having a whole lot to talk about from the Mississippi State perspective. And there's years like that where there's really just not a whole lot to talk about. That's not the case with Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is one of the huge storylines at this year's SEC Media Days about, because everybody wants to find out about this NCAA and get the latest on it and try to get some type of statement on, where this thing's at, where it's headed, if they get any type of information out of it. So it's going to be, it shouldn't be blindsiding him. When he takes the stage on Thursday, he should know that it's coming, and it's coming hard. You're right. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of questions asked in that main ballroom about the actual Ole Miss team that's going to take the field next year. It's all going to be NCAA stuff.
Well, we will see. I do believe that if he comes out and makes a strong statement at the beginning and answers each of the NCAA questions with a strong no comment, I think they will die down a little bit. But it's going to be hard to hear much about the football team tomorrow. But let's talk about that football team a little bit. A couple of talking points right now for Ole Miss. Can the Rebels run the ball? New offensive coordinator under Phil Longo was brought in. Kind of a surprise move, I thought, last year. You know, we saw the defense was very bad, and it was kind of time to make a change. And Dave Womack did retire, however you want to call that. It was presented as a retirement, and Dave certainly contributed a lot to Ole Miss football in his time as defensive coordinator. Last year's defense was not good. It was really pretty bad, and now there's a change, and Wesley McGriff has come in, so there's a change there. But, you know, the termination, the firing of Dan Werner was, kind of a surprise. It made sense when Freeze laid out the reasons that he did it after the fact. But before that, you look on paper and you think, man, this bunch is scoring a lot of points and they're moving the football and you've got good quarterback play and good receivers. But he wanted to run the ball better, Freeze, and he wanted to be more effective in short yardage. And I'll tell you, ever since Hugh Freeze has been the coach and Dan Werner was the coordinator, this team has struggled in short yardage offense. When they've had third and short, I mean, it was better for this team to be third and five, where the defense really didn't know if you were going to run or pass, than for them to be third and one. But, Phil Longo, very successful at Sam Houston State with the run game, and very creative with lots of schemes there, and we'll see. Freeze wants to be better in short yardage, wants to be better in the red zone. We'll see if they can do that. I think they're going to have a good offensive line that will be the first step. Lots of experience returning there, and some young guys who haven't gotten on the field, but they've recruited to this offensive line position for several years. So a lot of redshirt freshmen there behind them with some exciting young talent. And the running backs, Jordan Wilkins back after a year away, in good shape, good physical condition, and some potential there at running back. We'll see if they'll be able to run the ball. Will Ole Miss be better defensively? Can McGriff, as a new coordinator, come in and bring some energy to this bunch and get more production? I know as the Rebels were leaving spring ball, he was saying that, hey, got to be better up the middle. From the defensive line to the safeties, got to be better on the line, at linebacker, and with the safeties. I like this team on the defensive line, Logan. I think there is potential for them to have a strong group. Benito Jones, the four technique there at nose, was their best defensive lineman at the end of last year. Now you put in Breland Speaks, who was a guy that they thought was going to have a great year last year. Might come into his own after Robert Kimdichie had moved on. That wasn't the case. Speaks struggled, kind of fell off the map, and had some weight loss during the season, and didn't really know what was going on. He had a great spring. Can that translate to a great regular season? If it does, if Breland Speaks returns to the form that he showed as a sophomore in 2015, and if Benito Jones makes that standard year one to year two jump, I think they could be pretty good on the defensive line. I like where they are on the ends with Marquise Haynes, one of their top pass rushers in school history. And the other end looks like it'll be Kadir Shepherd, the Syracuse transfer. I think they have the potential to be pretty good on the defensive line. Will they be better at linebacker? I think they can be if they can keep Dietrich Bing Dukes, the middle linebacker, in the box. I think they can be better. I think he'll be a strong physical tackler if they keep him in schemes that has him just around the middle of the field. The problem with that is going to be you're going to find creative offensive coordinators who will find a way to isolate him in the passing game. But you can look at this Ole Miss defense And there is a path to improvement. I think they have some bodies and some ability in the secondary. Where Ken Webster fits into that, coming off a really bad ACL tear, remains to be seen. He goes into August camp number two at one of the cornerbacks. He was set for a really big season last year, looked really good physically before he tore the ACL in the opener against Florida State. I look at this team, Logan, and you know, I think most people want to judge them right now from the NCAA perspective. They think that's a distraction and that that's going to be a driving force in how this team plays. I don't think that's the case. I think the NCAA cloud has been over this team for so long now that the players are used to it. I think the bigger problem is going to be the defense. They're going to really have to be better. They're going to have to stay healthy. They don't have a lot of depth. I think if they do improve on defense, if they can stay healthy and avoid major injuries, I don't think this is automatically a 4-8 team. 5-7, I think it could become that with injuries at certain positions, but if they can avoid those, if they can be a little bit better on defense, I think they're going to score some points, and I think this team could get up to 7 wins or so. I think it could be a surprise team if it stays healthy. We'll see, folks. Media Days comes to a close tomorrow on Thursday. We're producing this for you from the hotel room on Wednesday night. We'll see what Hugh Freeze has to say with his time in the main ballroom. Well, thank you for clicking in with us today and being a part of Double Coverage. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast. That's Brad Locke and Derek Russell coming to you every Wednesday and Friday. And Logan and I will be back with you in 2 weeks for another round of Double Coverage.